Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, June 20th. I'm Ray Graff. Well, summer is finally upon us. If you are someone who looks forward to a road trip to celebrate the season, you want to make sure your vehicle is in tip-top shape before hitting the open road. Back in the studio to offer his advice is Gordon Fricke. Gordon is owner and operator of Barber & Fricke in Hoosick Falls, New York. It's an independent repair, auto body, towing, and used car facility. If you have a question about your car or truck, 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551, or you may email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Again, the number, 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke and your car calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hi, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. On the program today to answer your automotive maintenance and repair questions, none other than Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. It's an independent repair, auto body, towing, and used car facility. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service industry for more than 30 years. He is always a popular guest on this program. I advise you to call early. 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. If you want, you can tweet your questions and comments at WAMCVoxPop, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Again, the number, and that's the best way, 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, welcome back to the program, sir.
Thanks, Ray. Great to be here.
You ready for summer?
Well, when is it starting?
I think it starts tomorrow.
Yes, that's right.
That's good. That's driving weather.
And the nights are going to, or the days are going to start getting shorter?
Already.
Well, that's what Neil Estano said this morning.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
that's
it's true. So
yeah, I know.
Days will get shorter.
Better get that summer going.
They'll be long for a while, so we'll have plenty of good driving weather. Yeah. You know, the type of excitement that your appearances raise on this program, we already have two emails. You ready?
Wow. All right.
Here we go. This one is from Jay. Jay says, I have a 2005 Honda CR-V, only 80,000 miles on it. When I bought it, I had to recharge the AC. It was a Florida car with 70,000 miles. It lasted only 1 year, and I have no AC again. What could the problem be?
Yeah. If he's lost his refrigerant again, obviously there's a leak somewhere.
Right.
And sometimes finding those leaks is very difficult. What's commonly done is you inject a dye into the system where the refrigerant goes, and it's a luminescent dye. It looks like that stuff on these crime shows, you know, that turns up lime green or
sure, yeah,
under ultraviolet light. And that will usually locate the source of the leak. If it's leaking inside where the evaporator is located, that's in the dash area,
yeah,
much more difficult to trace out. You need a sniffer, a detector that sniffs out the gas.
Yeah.
But I think what he's going to need to do is get it recharged, get some dye in it, and go through the system and hopefully find the leak.
I mean, if it lasts a year, then you just recharge it every summer, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, if it's that hard to find the leak and it takes a total year to go down, yes, recharge it and see how it goes.
However, it does get expensive if you go to your local shop and do it. If you can do it yourself, it's very inexpensive.
Yeah, you can buy those kits,
yep,
which originally when R12, the original Freon, yep, was phased out, everybody was kind of gun shy, or even the manufacturers weren't offering these do-it-yourself kits, and now they're all over the place with the 134A, or they have been.
Just make sure you put the nozzle on the right, you know, the intake and not the outtake.
They're sized, so you can't mix them up.
Yeah, otherwise it could be very ugly. This one is from, I don't know who this is from, doesn't say. I have a 2012 Forester with about 58,000 miles on it. It has a low rumble slash rattle when I'm not pressing on the gas. It's more prominent in the winter. Is it something that needs attention, or is it the natural sound of my engine? Should the engine be essentially silent? Any inexpensive ideas? That's the first question.
Yeah.
And then there are two more short questions.
Oh, boy. All right, so the first one, the noise. Being a Subaru, they're very, very susceptible to exhaust shield rattles, primarily from the catalytic converter area. They're wrapped in heat shields, and there isn't a Subaru out there with any age and mileage on it that doesn't have a shield rattle.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing that's what's happening there.
That's not really a low, low rumble, though.
If you're sitting at idle, it sounds like they're not hearing this in motion by the talk of it.
Nope.
So although the engine is going to make some sounds, and maybe it's making more noise than they're accustomed to.
You know, do air conditioners have similar plates? In my Nissan, my Pathfinder, the air conditioner occasionally when I'm at a stoplight or whatever. Oh, well, we turned somebody on already. Hang in there for just a moment. The air conditioner will rattle. It sounds like a metal plate.
When it's engaging, when you hear it click on?
Sort of, yeah, I guess so.
Here's an interesting thing, Ray, and this may fall into your vehicle's category. I have had cars that have an exhaust rattle when the compressor comes on because it puts more of a strain on the engine.
Interesting.
And changes how the vibrations are, and it will make a rattle come about when the compressor kicks on, fooling you into thinking it might be an AC issue.
And you're right. But, it does fool me because it seems like it's not where the exhaust is. It seems like it's on
up
the left front. But I could be wrong.
And there could be something else up there rattling, too.
Yeah, that's lovely. Our number here is 800-348-2551. And now we'll go to the phones, and we'll start out with Arthur and Pauling. Arthur, you're on.
Yeah, I have the 09 S150 with a 4.6 engine that had the valve flapping the last time he was on. And now I notice another sound along with the valve flapping. And it only happens when I step on the gas, and it's kind of like a very faint grinding sound, and it's coincident with the valve flapping. So I was wondering, can valve flapping metamorphose into something else?
Yeah, I think your truck, we talked about it, we thought it might have been a piston slapping sound.
That's right.
Kind of like marbles in a can making like a dull rattling sound.
Right.
Yeah. And if you step on the gas, you'll hear a more of a grind.
Yeah, it's a very faint, wispy kind of sounds, but it's only when you step on the gas, and it's more pronounced when you're going uphill.
Okay. What year you said was an 09?
Yep.
Be suspicious of exhaust leaks up at the engine area, primarily from the manifolds to the engine, or the catalytic converter front pipes to the manifolds themselves. You may be getting a leak, and a manifold leak is a strange sound because it almost mimics a valve lifter ticking. But you could also have some pulley belt issues. I mean, it's hard to nail a sound down even when you're near the vehicle. There's a few things that it could be.
All right, Arthur, thanks for the call. By the way, I forgot the second question here from our emailer. Any inexpensive ideas for fixing a snapped-off antenna on a 2012 Forester? It's the 8-inch rubber ones that stick off the top.
Just replace it. I don't think you can fabricate anything like a coat hanger. The old days.
I remember that.
Did you ever have a coat hanger for an antenna?
Sure, in the car.
Yeah,
yeah, I remember having an old Caprice or something.
Yeah,
that had
antenna
that.
Broke off. You put a coat hanger in there.
Yeah,
yeah.
All right, let's not do that anymore. All right, we go to Mike in Saratoga Springs. Mike.
Hello, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. I'm actually calling about my teenage son, but he has a 2010 Mazda 3, and he was driving yesterday, and I think it's called the automatic transaxle light came on briefly, and he said it felt like something happened in the transmission quick, like for 3-4 seconds, and it just went back, the light went off, and it happened twice yesterday. I checked the transmission fluid, and it looked dirty, but it was full, or at least up to the line.
Yeah. Was it the check engine light? I don't think that vehicle has a particular light that says check transmission, although some of them flashed the shift indicator light if there was a transmission issue.
I think we looked it up. Yeah, it was like the engine light, but they said it didn't blink, so it was we haven't brought. I guess you have to hook it up to the computer, right?
Yeah, you know what I would do is definitely get it scanned just to see what happened, and they'll, even if the light is currently not on, there should be some history in there as to what code did come on.
Okay.
as a follow-up, how often would you recommend, is the automatic, obviously, changing the transmission fluid?
Yeah. If you look in the manual, that's a good guide, and they'll tell you about normal driving and severe driving. Some car manufacturers have no maintenance at all, and others recommend doing it sometimes as frequently as 30,000 miles if it's being if the vehicle's towing anything.
Mm.
So look at the manual, and I would lean towards the severe use category. Or
it's a teenager.
You with a severe use, right?
That's right.
Yeah, you've been there.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And he's a pizza delivery guy. All right. Thank you.
Definitely severe duty.
Quick question. We have to take a break here in a moment. The number is 800-348-2551. Quick question about those code readers.
Yeah.
Now, they're very inexpensive nowadays.
Yes.
You can buy them very – there are limitations?
Yes. I mean, they will read your codes, and some are will go into transmission, and some will even go in there and tell you about manufacturer-specific codes. I have a really expensive professional analyzer, and I also have a inexpensive quick plug-in code reader.
Yeah.
And that was something like $49.
Yeah.
And I use it all the time because it's so fast and easy.
It's pretty handy.
Yeah,
to
they
have.
Work.
Our
yeah.
number here is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest. Lines are loaded up. When you hear somebody hang up, that's your cue to call. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. Number's 800-348-2551. We have Gordon Fricke in the house here to answer your car questions. Three emails and then back to the phones. This one came in from Elaine. Speaking of Subarus, my 2014 Forester has ridiculously loud air noise from the place where the stationary small window for the front seat and the window that opens. The dealer ordered a door seal, but I don't think a door seal will fix it because it's not the door. Thanks, Elaine.
Hmm. Well, between the inner door panel and the door itself is a membrane.
Yeah.
And on a lot of cars, it's insulated for sound absorption.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if something happened during the assembly and maybe that thing's torn, ripped, or not put in properly.
Huh.
Or it's an issue where the window meets that little corner, or the seal from the door to the car, but I think they're ordering that big gasket. Is that what they
said? Think so.
Yeah.
Well, you really can't answer without checking it out.
It's got to come. Yeah, okay. It's got to be tested.
This one is from Anxious in Rhinebeck. Anxious writes, bought a used Prius, which I love, with a push-to-start button, but this electronic key is freaking me out. I'm terrible with keys and usually leave in my car, but I've been told it will drain the battery. Also, what will happen when the battery in the fob dies? Will I be stranded? I wish it had a regular key.
I'm telling you, Ray, the keyless cars, the push-button cars, a lot of people are having a tough time transitioning from a metal key to no key.
Yeah.
And all of them have a real metal key in that fob that you get that comes out with a little flick of a button or a lever, and there is a key lock cylinder in the vehicle somewhere to let you get in. Sometimes it's hidden under a cover where the normal key used to go, like the Volkswagens.
Well, if you leave the fob in the car? That's the point.
Well, then you are in major trouble without another fob. You got to call the locksmith to get into the car.
Yeah.
But,
Yeah, that's quite something, these push-button cars. Actually, it's not a new thing at all.
It is not. It was something that was going on in the,
50s?
Yeah, 30s, 40s, 50s, yeah.
This one came in from Christine in Water Valete. My car is showing rust underneath each of the front doors. I've been wondering if it's time to trade. I'm worried the rust might take over. Should I be worried or should I think about looking for a new vehicle? I'm researching hybrids. Any thoughts on hybrids? Well, a couple of questions there. One, rust never sleeps, right?
Neil Young says
right,
so.
Indeed. Any advice there?
Yeah. So when you are seeing rust, either on your fender wells, around your bottoms of your doors and other places, that means there's a lot more under the vehicle that you're not seeing because that's not as protected and it's more prone to getting beat up by stones and debris and,
yeah.
and salt and all the junk. My suggestion at that point is get the car into a shop, ask them to raise it, and give you an opinion on the condition of the undercarriage.
Okay.
And they make very quickly help decide what to do with it.
All right. And what about hybrids? Any thoughts on hybrids?
Yeah. I mean, hybrid is interesting. I was just listening to something the other day about hybrids that they're kind of the transition or stepping stone to full electric.
Right.
Because there's a lot of full electric cars in the works and on the road now. Like
yeah.
the Nissan Leaf.
Sure.
Most popular full electric car now. So, I mean, we could talk forever about hybrids and electrics, but the hybrids in some cases do not provide much better economy than a comparable small car, economical car of that size, but it's a transition to electric use.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Gordon Fricke is our guest, and the number is 800-348-2551. David in Pittsfield. David, you're on.
Hi. Good afternoon. Look, my question is there any information out there that rates or analyzes the top synthetic motor oils? Advertising is one thing,
yeah.
reality is another.
Yep.
What do you say on that? How do I know which one is maybe better in one application than another?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Consumer Reports has something
Probably.
About that, I would guess.
Can't say I've seen anything there.
Okay.
That's why I was asking
yeah.
if you know a professional publication or anything.
Yes.
That
there is a Petroleum Institute, I don't know if it's of America, but there is an agency that does analyze and comment and make all kinds of tests on various oils. And I'm sure
okay.
on the internet you could probably very easily find that, and they'd probably do some grades of different oil manufacturers.
Do you have any observations in
well,
your experience?
We service a fair amount of European cars, and they got on the synthetic
early
because of offsetting some
cost.
Yeah. Well, that and oil sludge issues, plugging up little passages, and keeping the oil in the crankcase longer.
Mm.
Castrol was a recommended brand by a lot of European car
right.
makers for quite some time
yep.
and still is. Porsche's had a Shell sticker on their engine, underneath the engine lid for many, many years. I would always stick with a big major brand, not a off-brand, no-name container that just says synthetic oil on it. You
yeah.
know?
The other thing, too, is that sometimes in an older car or older engine-style applications, the synthetic sometimes doesn't give you the wear protections, and you've got to go to an off-brand or a specialized brand to get the cam wear protection and
yes.
so forth that's not offered by the top brands and
correct
that you normally drive. Is that your experience also?
Yes. I have some older cars, and I won't put the high-tech synthetics in those because they don't need it, and it doesn't help them, and it actually will not supply the type of lube that those engines need. They called it a flat tappet engine where there's
right.
metal-to-metal rubbing. So you need
on
an
the
oil,
cams especially. Yeah.
yeah, yeah. You need oils with yeah. zinc in them yeah. for the most part.
Yeah, or there's a, well, I won't mention any brands, but
great.
There's a couple out there that people have to switch to if they've got
yes.
an older car or using it for vintage racing purposes,
yep.
et cetera. So
and
I just wondered what your take was.
And viscosities. Older cars, looser tolerances, need thicker oil. New cars today, Honda's coming out with or is already using a 0.16 weight. That's pretty thin.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
David, thanks for the call. Let's go to Fred in Clifton Park. Fred, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
I have a question about touchscreens. Is it possible with the right combination of people, maybe an electrical engineer, a computer specialist, or a competent mechanic to remove a touchscreen and replace it with a panel with mechanical knobs and switches, or the computers, or the cars just too heavily invested in computers to make that possible?
Yeah, it's all network now. So
okay.
you couldn't, to break out all those circuits and put in analog or manual switches would be a massive project and time-consuming
okay.
and expensive. So, no, unfortunately, we've gone too far.
I'm with you, though, Fred. I'd much rather have the old-school way.
Yeah. they're just a distraction, I find.
I hear you, man. Well, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it very much. You know, there was nothing wrong with the old way.
As cars get newer, there are less knobs and switches and things to push and turn, and the touchscreens are taking over. And I agree with Fred in it is a distraction because that big screen is where you do everything. Heat, air conditioning, sound, navigation, and when
and
I
email and texting and everything else.
Everything is on that screen. So,
I don't like it. And I don't want a regular carburetor, too.
You go back to the 60s?
Go back to the Stone Age. 70s, I've been told that before. Yeah. Andy in Delmar. Andy, you're on.
Hi, I have a 2016 Sienna XLE, and sometimes when I push the start button, car's got 48,000 miles on it. Sometimes when I push the start button, it'll, like, start for a second and die, and sometimes I'll go through that, like, five or six times until the whole thing fires. I did get on, like, a, you know, a message board, and somebody said they thought my battery might be going slightly, even though it has plenty of charge to start everything. They thought maybe the battery wasn't producing enough voltage to the coil packs or something. So I'm just wondering if you've run across this.
The year of the vehicle again?
2016.
So that battery should still be okay, but these systems are all voltage dependent now. So the computer's looking at the voltage. And if the voltage is too low, it'll prevent certain things from operating. And one of them is engine start. So you'll push the button and it'll either try to start and then give out, or it won't crank at all. There is that possibility that your battery is getting weak, and it would be a good idea to get it tested. Could be that easy. At that mileage, I wouldn't be suspicious of other things maintenance-wise yet. But, yeah, there is that possibility.
And maintenance-wise, what are you thinking that might be another route?
Well, it's too young, really, for spark plugs and things like that. What did you say there was, 48,000 miles?
Correct.
Yeah, so you really don't need much other than oil changes and filters. And the fact that it's a cranking issue versus a running problem, gasoline additives are always good, but I don't know if it's going to make any difference here. I think I would I would start with getting the battery tested just to rule that out. Okay. And if they say, man, you are marginal, you might want to change it.
All right, Andy, thanks for the call. Don't most vehicles have a battery meter right on?
A lot of them still have a volt gauge of some sort, or it reads a range of where you're okay. But the newer they get, the less of that gaugery they have, you know?
All right, let's go back to our phones here, and now we go over to Bob in Rhinebeck. Bob, you're on.
Hi, yes, I got a 2009 Ford Ranger, and it started wanting some noise going down a thruway, and it has about 72,000 miles on it in the transmission, I believe. So I was thinking that the quick fix to look at it would be just to change out the transmission fluid since it's never been changed out.
So when do you hear the whine? Constantly when moving?
No, not in the lower gears. When going faster in the fourth or fifth gear. And usually during acceleration.
If you take your foot off the gas pedal, does the whining stop?
Yes, it does. I mean, I've already coasted down a hill and pushed on the gas pedal, and the whining doesn't happen at all. So it's only when it's in gear.
And when you are accelerating or keeping the vehicle in motion, not while coasting, is that correct?
A little bit. Generally not on acceleration, just usually on just the constant drive at whatever speed on that.
Do you think the whine is coming more towards the back end of the vehicle?
It's like right under me.
Right under you? So the Ranger's got some gear trains in there. It's got, you know, a conventional rear differential, and they can whine, particularly if you've got a leaking seal back there and the fluid level's gone too low. I would be suspicious of checking the gear oil in the rear differential, make sure nothing's leaking out of it, and it's, your vehicle has a front differential as well, and it also has a transfer case in there in between everything. So you've got some gear mechanisms in your drivetrain that could cause that whining sound. It could be coming from the automatic, and if it is, that's not good because a fluid change at this point probably wouldn't solve a big wear issue or a whining. At the very least, check the fluid level, see how bad it looks.
So if the differentials are leaking, would he see telltale signs on the driveway?
That, or they would be, you know, oily. The units would have some oil running out of them, and you'd see the traces of the gear oil.
Okay.
So that's what I would be doing first.
All right, Bob, thank you for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest. We go over to Paul in Scotia. Paul.
Hello. I have a 95 Buick Roadmaster wagon. It's got an irregular miss in it. But it's only apparent if I'm driving at a constant speed on level ground. If I accelerate, there's no miss at all, and it'll also miss has an irregular miss at idle. Hmm. I replaced the plugs, the wires, and I recently replaced the distributor and the ignition module for other reasons, but it's still there.
Yeah, that's the last of the big V8 rear-wheel drive traditional U.S. cars, the Roadmasters.
Love it.
They were
love it.
Big cars, lots of power. So an engine miss can occur from more than just your spark, your secondary ignition system, which you've somewhat addressed there. Let's see. What year is it again?
95.
95. It's got about 140,000 miles on it. So it runs like a top, except for that miss.
So I haven't been under the hood of one of those cars in a long time. Does that have a distributor cap and wires, or does that have a coil pack?
But the distributor is actually mounted in the block at the front of the engine.
Okay, so it's a coil pack. Yeah, okay. You could be developing a weak ignition coil, and that's hard to test. Does it ever turn on the check engine light?
No.
Because that your car would...
Not when I start the car, but it goes right out again.
Yeah, and that's a hard one because that's not what they call OBD2. That happened in 1996. Mm. So what you can do is if you're suspicious of ignition, you can get a spray bottle, like a misting spray bottle, put in water and a little bit of isopropyl alcohol, and you can mist down the ignition coils and then start the engine and see if it's spark jumping around and it's misfiring badly, because that isopropyl alcohol and water mix will promote leakage of high tension voltage that goes to your spark plugs. And you may see that it's jumping between a couple of coil towers or coming out of the coil, and there you go. You might just need an ignition coil. Other than that...
Yeah, this thing doesn't have any plug towers. It's sort of like a flat affair that is bolts into the front of the engine behind the pulleys.
Yeah.
So it's really not visible unless you use a mirror.
And that's where all the spark plug wires come out of?
They go into that, yes.
Yeah, I'd be very suspicious of that unit. That's the coil pack.
Whole unit with a brand new one.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't just go throw one in there. I would...
check it first.
Do some testing, but that's entirely possible that's where your misfire is coming from.
Hey, Paul, I got a question for you.
What
kind of phone you got, man?
I have a Sony, but it runs through a Magic Jack.
Okay, because it sounds like you're on an old ham radio.
Oh, maybe it's the Magic Jack. It goes through the internet.
Okay, well, there you go. All right, so it's being routed via Botswana or something. Hey, Paul, thanks for the call. We appreciate it very much. The number is 800-348-2551. And now let's go to Mark in Salem. Mark, you're on.
Hi, Ray. Talk about going back to the dinosaur days.
Yeah.
I'm suffering from an old age crisis, and I'm in the process of buying a 1975 MGB.
Sweet.
I went over the whole car. It's pristine. It's never been driven in the winter. It was it's upstate New York car, but the guy took it off the road every winter, and he's owned it for like 30 years and gave it to his son that was in storage. I turned it on and drove, listened to the engine. Everything is super in it. But he told me that the rack and pinion has a little play in it. And I can't find whether that rack and pinion, the rack itself or the pinion, has an adjustment shim on it, so that you can kind of tighten it up without having to replace it, or whether you have to replace the whole thing. That was my first question.
Okay.
Second question is it okay to run 91 octane non-ethanol gas and has SU carburetors in it.
Yeah. So your first question about the steering rack is early on non-power racks, some of them you could make an adjustment, and it wasn't easy. I don't think the rack is adjustable on that car. And the question is where the play is. If it's in where the rack gear slides in and out of the tube, there's bushings in there, and that's a rebuild slash replace it with another one.
Yeah.
And if the play is not excessive, it's really not that big of a deal in terms
I'm not too concerned.
Yeah, I mean, you're just seasonal use with that car. You're not going to put tons of miles on it. So
it only has 65,000 miles on it.
Yeah. If it's okay and safe, I don't think I'd be overly concerned about that.
Okay.
And actually, that 91 ethanol free is the best thing to put in that and any older car pre anything with carburetors or even prior to when ethanol started blending into our gasoline. So it's a good thing
and
to use.
And 91 octane's enough.
Well, that's the way all this ethanol-free comes. That's the only way I've seen it ever being blended.
Yeah.
But that's good. So it goes in everything.
All right. Mark, thank you. We have to take a quick break here. Gordon Fricke is our guest. Cars today on the program. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Gordon Fricke is our guest. An email here, Gordon, and then we'll hit the phones as fast as we can. This one's from Leanne, a person after your own heart. Leanne writes, I have a 1995 BMW 325 convertible. Runs great, but I recently had an incident where I put the key in the ignition, tried to turn it on, nothing happened. It wasn't the battery. It did not try to start at all. I did everything. I did eventually get it to start after a few tries, but do you have any idea what may be going on?
Well, you know, the potential for an ignition switch failure in a car of that vintage is high.
Yeah.
And if the ignition switch fails, it won't supply any power to anything. Won't crank. You may not get any lights. You may not have anything operate at all. And you take the key out or turn it backwards a couple times, and then all of a sudden, bang, it works. So I'd be suspicious of an ignition switch, but I'd also be careful of battery connections, both at the battery and where they terminate. One's going to go to the chassis of that car, and some cars also had an additional body ground.
Yeah.
And then the big fat red wire comes off the battery and goes directly to the starter. But also things branch out. So there's some things to check.
Could it be the starter? Or
it could also be the starter.
All right.
It needs some testing.
And if you see any of that green flaky stuff on the terminals of your battery, that's a good place to start.
It's a telltale that you got some corrosion going on that needs to be taken care
of. However, it's caustic, so wear some plastic gloves
or
something.
Yeah, bad stuff.
Yeah. All right, back to the phones, 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest. And Don in Conway, Massachusetts. Don, you're on.
Hi, this is an electrical leak that drains the battery. It started when it's a 2005 VW TDI wagon with 140,000 miles on it. It started when I didn't use it for 2 days over the weekend, and battery was dead, and I needed to get it charged several times, and finally replaced the battery. But it continues to do that. I put on a mechanical switch, which means that if I go anywhere, I open the hood and throw the switch.
Yeah.
And then have to throw it back again when I want to start. So I've got to up to 12 hours where it seems to be okay, but I don't want to have to, in the middle of winter, be getting out and middle of the night throwing this switch all the time.
Right.
Is there a way to find out about this other than taking it to the dealer where they just replace every electrical thing until
there
gets fixed?
There is, and I don't know how deep you can go or want to go, but with a 12-volt test light, an old-school 12-volt test light with a light bulb in it, not an LED, you would take that cutoff switch that you installed, mm-hmm. and you would take the test light and put one lead of it on the terminal of the battery and the point of the test light on the other side of your switch, which leads to the car.
Mm-hmm.
And then you, with the door shut, key out, everything turned off, no doors open, mm-hmm. you would then open up your switch and see if that light bulb is glowing or if it's on bright.
Mm.
If it's a bright light bulb, you've got a big consumer. Something's drawing. Mm-hmm. Light in the trunk, light in the glove box, something on. If you find there's absolutely nothing turned on, you still have that big glowing light, you've got a glitch somewhere drawing your current, and that's the tough part. So the old school way was to pull one fuse at a time until the test light goes out, and you've at mm-hmm. least found the circuit that's causing the draw.
Yeah.
That circuit could have 10 consumers on it, but that rules you out. The other thing that can happen once in a while with vintage Volkswagens of that era is your computer can get into a logic lock situation, and it can be keeping things on that it shouldn't. And you disconnecting that battery every night almost always unlocks these computers.
Reboots it.
Yeah, but there's an additional method that you can do, but you got to be careful when you unhook your knife switch or your on-off switch.
Right.
You would then connect the positive to the negative, but not on the battery side, on the car side, so it drains all the capacitors and all the memory units in the entire car for a couple of hours and reconnect it. But you're not crossing the battery. You're just making a loop in the car.
So you gotta make sure you're doing the right thing there.
You got to be really careful doing that so you don't burn yourself up.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's very time-consuming and hair-pulling operation to find a current draw.
Don, thanks for the call. By the way, speaking of VW, you have that beautiful old VW bus in your shop. You see they're coming out with a VW bus again?
All electric.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's pretty exciting.
It's kind of cool looking. Yeah. I saw some pictures.
I know you'll get one, right?
Yeah, I don't know about that. I get stuff when it's 10 years old
I know.
Or older.
I'm with you there. Let's go to Kathleen in the Berkshires. Kathleen.
Hi, yes. Thank you. I was wondering your opinion, Gordon, on Hyundai cars, specifically a 2014, I think it's an Elantra.
Yeah. In terms of durability or economy or just general?
I'm looking at one that I may purchase.
Yeah. So Hyundai started out in, I think, the 80s.
Yep.
And they were not very good. They had a lot
That's what I've heard.
They had a lot of growing pains, and they had issues. They had corrosion and rust problems. They had reliability and wear out. But they learned very quickly, and they're on par with a lot of your major manufacturers now, for sure. They're not the inexpensive car that they once were. They were really cheaper than anything at one time, so that's why everybody bought them.
Mm-hmm.
Not as cheap as a Yugo.
You remember those?
Oh, yeah, I do.
So are you buying a new one or a used one?
It's a used one, 2014.
14, you said. Okay,
115,000 miles.
How many? 115?
Yeah.
Well, 115. Here's my fear about that. If that car was not properly maintained for that 115.
I've run the Carfax on it, and it that looks pretty good.
Well, that means no one dropped it in a pond, Kathleen, but that doesn't mean they did the oil changes.
Exactly.
And that's true.
Very quickly, because we still have a ton of calls.
I did have my mechanic look at it.
Okay.
Yep, that's a good first start.
Yeah, he approved it.
All right.
This is a
price and my needs. He's a wonderful mechanic.
Yeah, that's great. So a couple things that I have discovered on these were due to lack of maintenance, not getting the oil changed frequently.
Mm.
We've seen a lot of wear in the cam drive system.
Ah.
And the chain stretches and wears, the tensioner fails, the guides wear out, and the engine goes out of time. And it's a very, very costly repair.
Mm.
Due to the lack of its previous life not getting serviced properly. And that's a hard thing to find out on a car with 115,000 miles on it. So that's my only caution is how it was cared for in its previous life, and that's very hard to find out.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Kathleen, thanks for the call. We go to Kathy in Hopewell Junction. Kathy. Hello? Kathy, are you there? Let's try it again. Kathy, are you with us? No? Okay. Strange things are going on with our phones. Let's go to Frankie. Frankie in Sheffield, you're on.
Yeah. My problem is I spilled quite a bit of diesel fuel in my trunk of my car.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if your guest could give me any idea or clue or what I can do to fix this.
Okay, so there's a diesel spill in your trunk. Gotcha.
So it's the odor that you're trying to get rid of?
Well, yes, sir. It's pretty strong. It happened on Monday.
Yeah.
And I've tried to clean it up as much as I can, but it's pretty bad.
Yeah, it's an awful smell that lingers. Heating guys, plumbing and heating guys, there is a, I believe it's a powder that is used to dissipate or absorb the odor of heating oil, which is the same thing as diesel fuel. And so I think what I would do if I were you is contact a plumbing and heating company and ask if you can buy some or you can get this stuff that they use when heating oil gets spilled on the owner's basement floor when they're doing furnace work inadvertently, because there is a product there that will kind of gobble that smell up and help. And I think that'd be about your only option.
Okay. Frankie, thanks for the call. Oh, my gosh. Here, we're running out of time. Let's go to Marie in Gardner, Massachusetts. Marie.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, guys. I have a 2016 Honda Fit, and most of the time it's in the winter. When I first come out in the morning to start my car, I hear a whirring sound in the front right-hand side of my engine, and it sounds like, you know, it whirs, a belt or something. Is there something going on in there?
So the sound you're hearing is shortly after you start it?
I put my foot on the, I have a press button car too. I put my foot on the thing, push the button, and I hear this sound.
Oh, do that again. Oh, very good.
Excellent. And that is before the engine is running or during the starting procedure or
during
after?
During its turn on, it's turning on.
Okay. So you've got some things turning on that side of the engine. Drive belt.
Something on the right-hand side,
That's where your drive belt, your alternator, air conditioning. There's a bunch of things turning on that side of the engine. How many miles are on this car?
35,000 miles.
So it's very possible that maybe it's belt-related or the tensioner that keeps that belt tight. And if that tensioner starts to stick, it'll chatter. Mm. And that could be the sound you're getting. I would have your shop check. You know, the only way they're going to reproduce that sound is just get it overnight and start it cold, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
But
yeah, that's right. Yep.
The condition of the belt is in question and good to have checked, and if the automatic tensioner is starting to stick, can certainly create that sound.
All right, Marie, thanks so much for the call. We now go to Larry in Sheffield. Hello, Larry.
Yes, hello. My wife has an 08 Toyota RAV4, and besides it's needing brakes, it recently develops a shutter when you get over 20 miles an hour, and it increases to 35. It gets pretty rough, but then when you go over 40 and on up to 60, it seems to kind of disappear. And I'm wondering if it could be a main bearing or a drive shaft, or what are your thoughts on it?
Are you feeling this on acceleration only?
No, it's happened. If you're just traveling at 35, it's there.
Tire balance.
So, even if you take your foot off the gas momentarily, it doesn't immediately stop that shutter?
No.
Because it's important to know if it's a power-on shutter or if it's a coasting, if it's there all the time. So, yeah.
It's there all the time at those speeds.
And does it ever get better other than when you go a little faster? In other words, driving it for an hour, still there if you go slow?
Well, I haven't driven it enough to answer that question.
Yeah, yeah. So Ray hit on
it
something.
It seems to start just like that. It just came on. It didn't used to be.
Do you feel it shaking the steering wheel?
No, it doesn't shake the steering wheel.
Hmm. So Ray was thinking wheel tire related, definitely something to consider.
Maybe you hit a pothole, Larry, and throw it out of balance.
Yeah, I had a vehicle come in yesterday with a kind of a nasty wobble. You know, the whole vehicle was vibrating and wobbling. It turned out that one of the back tires was starting to come apart. The belts were shifting, and the tire was starting to kind of deform.
Yeah.
And it came about pretty suddenly, and it was, and when you went faster, it covered up that issue.
Yeah.
So it could be wheel tire related for sure. I'd be checking that first.
All right, Larry, thanks a lot. Now, let's see. We have a few minutes left here, so we go to Joe in Gilderland. Joe.
I was wondering, I'm thinking of buying a used Suzuki car, and I'm just wondering how difficult it is to get parts for those things.
Yeah, that's a good concern, because it's been a number of years now that they stopped bringing those in, just like with Saabs. When Saab fell apart in, I think, 2011, maybe.
Yeah.
After some years, certain parts have become hard to find and more expensive. And with the Suzuki, I'm thinking the same thing will occur. Your normal service parts are readily available. Still, we have a couple of these that we work on, and you can find all the normal things still. But maybe some specific items could be difficult. So I'd be a little leery of buying one just for that reason.
Joe, thanks a lot. Quickly to Mike in Easton. Oh, boy. Mike in Easton, you're on.
Hey, how's it going, Ray? Thanks for taking the call. Sure. I have a 2017 Nissan Versa, and I'm driving right now. I'm going 62, and it's turning like 3,000 RPM.
62 miles an hour, 3,000 RPMs. We only have about 30 seconds here, Gordon.
Yeah, I'm assuming this is an automatic transmission.
No, it's a 5-speed manual.
It is a stick. So if you let up on the gas, do the RPMs come down?
Nope. I mean, they start too slowly.
So where is your tack normally at that speed?
That's normal. That's since I bought it with I bought it in October.
So you're asking if that's the normal RPM for that speed of the vehicle?
Yeah.
I'm thinking yes.
Wow. Amazing. All right, we're out of time. So, hey, Mike, follow up with us. Call us next time if the car is still running. Hey, Gordon Fricke, thanks for being here, man.
You're welcome. It was fun.
Support comes from Personal Wine Cellar, Glenville, home of Cellar Dweller, an eclectic selection of red, white wines and spirits. Wine tasting every Thursday and Friday. Home delivery services Thursday through Sunday, 518-399-9463. Adirondack Experience, the museum on Blue Mountain Lake, exploring people's connection to the Adirondacks through indoor and outdoor exhibits, activities, and events, adkx.org for details. At Capital Roots, making fresh local produce accessible to Capital Region neighborhoods, healthy, affordable food should be a right, not a privilege, capitalroots.org for more. Thanks again to Gordon Fricke for being here. Thank you for listening. As always, tremendous calls and emails. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Thanks to Barb King for answering the phones. Jimmy the Hammer Lavoulis is our producer. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, oh boy, the pie lady is returning tomorrow. Deanna Fox will be here with her latest summer pie creations. Right now, stand by for the Capital Connection.